This is Out of School, a show about the intersection of technology and education. My name is Bradley Chambers. I'm joined today by Carl Campion from the Archmere Academy. Carl, how's it going?
Very well. How are you?
Going good. Going good. Thanks for being here today. Before we get started, I want to briefly mention our sponsor. BDoc's Timeline 3D is back with us again this week with their great iOS app and Mac app. It's at BDocs.com. We'll talk about them more as the show goes on. So Carl, where is Archmere Academy?
Archmere is located in Claymont, Delaware, which is a city north of Wilmington, Delaware, probably the most known city in the state. And we're actually 5 minutes away from the Pennsylvania line and about 20 minutes away from the Philadelphia airport.
Yeah, we are kind of in the same situation here where we are within a stone's throw from the Georgia border. So we actually have quite a few kids that will come over from the state line, which makes it fun because we have to report numbers to the state of Georgia. Did those kids go to school here for, I guess, truancy information? So it's always makes it fun when you're crossing state lines with schools.
Yes, yes. We draw from New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Maryland and Delaware. So we're a four-state school.
So are you K-12?
We're a 9 through 12 college prep school with 470 students.
Yeah, you guys that are with high school kids, you have such different problems than I have. You know, we are K through five, and so when kids are in fifth grade, they're just learning enough about some of the inner workings of technology to be dangerous. But I mean, you have kids that could conceivably hack on your network.
True, this is true. Thankfully, we've had no serious issues to date since the rollout of this one-to-one program. So. Hoping to have no major issues at all.
Well, so tell us about your one-to-one program.
Okay, we launched a one-to-one program with MacBook Pros in August of 2011 after 2 or 3 years of investigation and conversation about the next step of technology at Archmere. After several conversations, and I know at one point you had Will Stites from Mount Clair Kimberly Academy on as a guest.
Yes.
Will was gracious enough to host myself, our headmaster, and our principal at the time for the day with some other schools from this area. And I think after that day-long visit and being greeted by fourth graders on the tech team, we knew that we could do this, that this was the right move for Archmere to do away with the traditional computer labs with desktops and carts of laptops in the science labs, to do away with most of them and launch a one-to-one program. And from that point we went into high gear of planning, and they were delivered in June of 2011 and distributed in August of 2011.
So that's a quick turnaround. You didn't give yourself much time for imaging.
We, believe it or not, I had had experience for 2 or 3 years using Deploy Studio. And I should back up and say that 6 months prior to that, we distributed MacBook Pros to our faculty. After we discussed this as a school community, it was concluded that the best thing to do was get them in the hands of the teachers a minimum a half a year earlier. And this is distributing to some faculty who were very, very comfortable going into their classroom or their office, logging onto their Dell using XP, and had no Macintosh experience or very little Macintosh experience. So that was important that we did that. But the imaging, I had the experience with Deploy Studio, and we built an image. It took maybe, a month to get it right. Obviously, there's ups and downs. And once we were comfortable with that image, myself and our a high school student who was invaluable that summer, I would say we imaged 480 of those MacBook Pros in about 5 days. We were doing them in lots of 20. And it worked, knock on wood, it worked very well. We're very, very, very pleased with that. It would image them. We still use the golden triangle. So they imaged them, did the AD bind, did the OD bind, renamed the computer, and off we went. So it was a very productive process that worked well.
Now, you said MacBook Pros. Are these 13 or 15?
13. Off-the-shelf, 13, 320 gigs, 4 gigs of RAM, and we're still on Snow Leopard. We have not upgraded yet.
Yeah, we're in the same boat. Now, our lease, we are probably going to take ownership of our new lease in about a month, so I've got a busy summer ahead of me.
Yes.
But we are still on Snow Leopard as well. And, you know, thinking back, that was probably the most stable operating system I think Apple has ever put out.
I've read that. And I how do you feel? I'm a little nervous about, you know, if we are in conversation about perhaps after 2 years trading one set of these as the class of 2013 leaves in May, trading one set up to 13-inch Airs, and I know we'll have the Mountain Lion to deal with. And how do you feel about that?
Well, I am more concerned from a training standpoint more than I am a functionality standpoint. Of course, we've got myself and then our headmaster that are on Mountain Lion. And, of course, I've mentioned in past shows where I moonlight for our church as well. And so a lot of those guys are already on Mountain Lion. You know, my stance with them is, hey, if you are – I'm not paying to upgrade your OS, but, hey, if you want to, here's how you do it. You know, we kind of give them a little bit more, you know, quite a bit of free reign on their machines. And so we, you know, it's worked well from that standpoint with our various printers and things like that. But I know our teachers have had 3 years of things looking and feeling as Snow Leopard. So the document management model is a concern, but our main app is Office. So, you know, obviously you still have the file save as and things like that. So
right.
I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. I think the training will be necessary. The only thing I noticed on for us, we have several Canon copiers. I noticed that the version of the driver for Snow Leopard does not work in Mountain Lion. So you have to uninstall, go on the site, pull down the latest drivers, and reinstall the printers. That's the only thing I've encountered in my testing. The Active Directory bind works. Everything else seems to be okay, but the print drivers.
And the thing that kind of makes me concerned, you know, back when we did Snow Leopard, we didn't include any, you know, I guess software assurance is what they used in the old Microsoft days. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that Mac term is, where you can basically pre-buy a number of years of OS upgrades. And with it looking like Apple is moving to a yearly cycle, that may be something that I guess schools need to consider. On the flip side, it appears that the pricing is eventually going to hit free with their OS, which I think in some ways makes sense. And they're already doing it with iOS. And that would guarantee that, you know, developers could always take advantage of the latest APIs. Because what was it, $20 with, I think it was $30 with Lion, and it was $20 with Mountain Lion, I believe. And so maybe this next one is $10. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then, you know, when you're buying in bulk, Apple usually knocks 50% off. So if it's, say, $10 for 10.9, do we get it for $5 a machine? But, of course, again, even at $5 a machine, if you've got over 400 machines, that's a lot of money.
And it's a budget. That's a line you have to plan for in your budget. It's got to be in there early and to know. I agree with you. I think Snow Leopard has been rock solid, and oh boy.
Well, and then also, if you look at the iOS model, because it's a free upgrade and the OS is advancing so quickly, developers are really eager to only target the newest operating system. So there's a lot of things that are much easier for developers than iOS 6, for example. But
it
feels like you don't see as many apps that are, say, only for Mountain Lion or only for Mountain Lion and Lion. It seems like, I mean, we've not ran into any issues with things not running on Snow Leopard. And you also have to look at, are there things that your students can or cannot do because they're on Snow Leopard? If all of their essential applications are still running, all you're really causing yourself is headache.
I agree. And Right. But is there a cutoff for the support? You know, you get a little nervous. Oh, we're two OSs back now. But you're right. It does just, a teacher brought that up the other day, you know, why this works. That's a good point. It does, as you said, it works, and all their core apps are working fine. Most of our students use Dropbox, so there's no issue there. It's a good question. But if you do an upgrade, you can't scale back, can you?
No, it seems like once you go, you kind of gonna. I mean, then you don't want your deployment to be split. Like, then you've got some folks on Snow Leopard, right, some on Mountain Lion, some on Lion. It does make sense to keep them steady.
Right.
And I guess the biggest thing that you get with Mountain Lion and Lion is the iCloud integration. So if you're in a school where you've got, say, each teacher has a MacBook Pro and an iPad Mini or an iPad, then they do get that iCloud integration. But again, that's only if you're using, iWork. And we're still, and while I would love to only use iWork, we are still primarily a Microsoft Office driven school. And again, you got an app like Dropbox, which does work on Snow Leopard. And actually, Dropbox, I believe, is still compatible with Tiger.
Really?
Yeah, we had an old, at our church, they had an old TV studio that's since been upgraded, that we had a workflow to get the videos onto Vimeo that included Dropbox. And it was an old G5 Mac, and it still ran Tiger, and Dropbox still worked for it amazingly, and it worked pretty well.
Mm.
And so now, you guys use Dropbox. What other software tools are you guys using?
I'm thinking of the core suite. Obviously, we have Office I'm thinking of what is in the image. Microsoft Office, Adobe Creative Suite 5, iWork, Geometry Sketchpad, GeoAlgebra is a free app. I think that's the second application that the math department uses. In our science department for years, I'm a former chemistry teacher, by the way. We have for a long time been using electronic notebooks with an application called NoteShare, which we have a Mac Pro that serves as the NoteShare server. Students, it's an electronic notebook that we set up so each team of students has a notebook, and only they can access the content of that notebook. And the teacher, of course, can go in and grade that notebook and check on their work as you go. And it's 12 or 5 years now that we've been doing that. So we use that in science. I think that's pretty much the suite, aside from the online apps that are used. The language department uses Quizlet a lot. They have digital text through VH Central, I believe it is. And a few other departments have some digital text as well. So that's probably the core suite. I'm probably forgetting one somewhere, but that's the ones that we deal with. Mostly, we still, like you, Office is still here. So we do provide it. And we have Google Apps. Google Apps. We made that conversion, like you, I think roughly in 2010, we made that conversion over.
Yeah, that was my next question, is what are you guys doing for email? One of the things that I think I don't know that Fraser and I have talked about it, I think I've talked about it to some other schools, is what I call the login problem, is that you have all these great web services and all these applications, but like how many realistic username and passwords can you expect your student to keep up with?
Right. I heard you talking to Cole Conrad about that. Believe me, I could run down a list for you. And I think we are working on a partial solution, I hope, for next year. How many logins do our students, our faculty, and our parents have to deal with? I don't know how you feel, but it's sort of got ahead of us a little bit here.
Well, yeah, because the tendency is like this new thing comes on the market. It's like, oh, we got to use that. And this is great. But then you've got to step back and say, well, we need, you know, we need something that kind of is easier to deploy. And I'll get that question from parents: why don't you do this? Or a teacher: why don't we do this school wide? And it's like, that sounds great, but you've got to think. I mean, it's one thing for me to sign, for a teacher to sign up for something to use on their computer.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole other thing for me to say that this is a school wide application that we're putting support into, that we're going to support, that we're going to deploy, and we're going to manage. It's a whole different question.
Right. Right. And to my point of, all of a sudden, a couple months ago, I realized, oh, wow, they have their computer login, which is against their Active Directory. Okay, that's fine. We use, as a temporary measure, we support a wiki blog on a Macintosh server. All right, that login is based against the Active Directory. That's fine. But then they have their grades through Blackboard and FA Web. Well, that's a whole different login. The seniors and juniors would use Naviance, the college search thing. That's a whole different login. Then they have their Google login. So yeah, all of a sudden, there it is. Too many passwords and too many ifs and too many. Also, where do you go if you lose your password or things break? I don't handle the FA Web. Our director of studies handles that. So they have to go to him, and it's, hopefully we can find some relief with that very soon.
I'm kind of in the same boat you are. We have the two things our parents have logins for is RenWeb, which is our student information system, and then we've got Fax, which is our tuition management system. Mm. And so I manage RenWeb. So if a parent gets locked out or forgets their password, I can change it. But their Fax password, I can't. Only our financial person handles that for obvious reasons. I have no interest, because that's where our financial aid information is. I've got no
skin in that game.
Yeah, I don't even want to know. But you also feel bad when a parent or a student comes to you that's like, hey, I need to reset this password. And you have to say, well, I don't handle that. Because I really don't like being the guy that tries to pass the buck on things. But if I really can't handle something, you just can't handle it.
Right. So what we're planning on next year is a second phase of our Whipple Hill website, where we will integrate the grading and the SIS, everything into that, so that the parents, the students, and faculty will have a login to through the website. That portal will hopefully alleviate some of that, so that the communication between the teachers and the students will be on the teacher pages at that point. Our wiki blog will go away. The grade access will be available at that point, and the same for the families as well. So we're shooting towards a unified communication system, which should make everybody in the school community make their lives a little less complicated. And that's been our goal.
That Whipple Hill solution is fairly new, is it not?
They're undergoing a significant renovation of the SIS and the grade, the learning management. Yes, it's new names that are on course, and a couple other names there. I'm sorry, they're escaping me at the moment. But yeah, it's we're excited for it. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work for our director of academics, scheduling wise, because we have to. We're moving to Redeker to do the scheduling that will import into Whipple Hill. So he is, he's been doing a lot of work to prep for that. So it's, but again, I think the ends will justify the work to get there.
Yeah, I saw the demo of that Whipple Hill solution, I guess back in the fall. I was at a conference, and I don't even think they had publicly announced it yet. Mm-hmm. And I was very, very impressed with it. It felt like it was a student information system that was built on a modern thinking of what websites look like and how people interact with them. And I was talking to somebody today about various church and school management systems. And so you've got the problem of you've got old school needs, but new school wants. So you've got the way you do, scheduling and things like that. Maybe you need a certain way, but then the way parents interact with their content. I mean, from what I can remember, that when if a teacher uploads a photo into Whipple Hill, they can tag it somewhat like it's Facebook, and then the parent mm-hmm. can see the photos that their kids are tagged in.
Yes, I think philosophically, Travis Warren, the CEO of the company, I think took that modern approach to how we communicate and did apply that to their new platform. I'm calling it a platform. They simplified it. You saw the demos, as you said. It is very very comprehensive in the format of communication. I really think everybody's going to benefit by that, and it is built in messaging and if you're a parent or parents with multiple students, it's a click away to go from student A to student B. It's really quite nice.
Well, and it seems like this is an opportunity for some company to come along and build, build the education equivalent of OpenID. Of course, OpenID failed miserably, in the real world. But it seems like that there's a way, if we could create a centralized login system for students, and then all the major sites could kind of partner and say, look, we want it to be easier for these web-based solutions to be deployed. And so let's build a solution. Again, that's why if we're looking for a software package that it can integrate in with Google apps, I am more likely to lean into that because we don't have to create new user accounts.
Right. And I this is not my forte, but I believe we're going to be able to invest in a single sign-on for Google apps through the Whipple Hill portal, which I hopefully will be able to take advantage of that. There's one less.
Yeah. Anytime you can save one, the better. Why don't we take a quick sponsor break right here and thank BDocs Timeline 3D for sponsoring the show. BDocs has been an incredible sponsor of Out of School for all of this year and a lot of the 2012. They make an incredible timeline application for iOS and for Mac. I'm telling you, if you need a timeline tool that is incredibly simple but incredibly powerful, you need to check out Timeline 3D for iOS. It's a universal application for the iPhone and for the iPad. So a couple of things you can do. So you can import photos and text, and on the fly, it can turn it into a 3D timeline. It is, again, an absolutely incredible application. All the reviews I've read have been in just outstanding for a couple of those. A person in the USA App Store, a must-have for trainers, teachers, speakers, and lecturers. David Sparks from MacSparky.com. It is like magic and makes me look brilliant. Fraser and I have talked on multiple occasions how sometimes Keynote and PowerPoint presentations can kind of feel long in the tooth, and BDocs is an alternative for your presentations as well. It's an incredible app, BDocs.com, BEEDOCS.com. In the App Store, it is also in the Apple Volume Purchase Program. So if you're buying more than 20 copies for your school, you get it half off. It's an incredible deal. If you can use the camera app on the iPhone, you can use BDocs Timeline 3D for iOS. So again, thanks for those guys for sponsoring the show. They help keep the lights on at Out of School headquarters. So thanks for their support. So what do you guys use in infrastructure-wise? We mentioned you've got the Active Directory and the Open Directory. I imagine the Active Directory is a Windows server and the Open Directory is a Mac server.
Yes, we have we've pared down to 6 servers, and that's a little bit much. We have the Active Directory server and the secondary server, the replica of that. We have the Open Directory server and a replica. And as I said, we have a standalone server that is the Wiki blog. And last spring, we got a new Mac Mini that is the Deploy Studio server. We separated that from the Wiki server. The Wiki gets a lot of use. And if we're trying to image off that server, I didn't want to continue down that path. So we have that. We started in 2011 with all Apple Extreme base stations. We wanted to keep going with that. We had this very unusual problem where I could not use the airport utility on my iMac to see the base stations. So I ended up, it just became very frustrating. So I ended up doing a lot of manual manipulation in the evening, going around plugging in getting on the ladder, plugging in to try to make sure I had all the settings right. So after a lot of homework and a lot of conversations and using some demos, we've started to move towards Aerohive. And frankly, after a conversation or two with you, so we made the investment in the Aerohive base stations just before Christmas, and after Christmas break, I configured and installed them in our main classroom building, took the Airport Extremes out of the loop, and it's been good. I think the throughput is improved. We've had no negative feedback about wireless access, and I think probably starting this spring through the summer, we'll continue with that swapping out of the Airport Extremes for the Aerohive units, and have one unified system that is really easy to manage and regulate.
What model of the Aerohive access points did you go with?
We chose to go with all 330s for now. After some conversations with them, the 330, they felt based on a site visit by our local reseller and some conversations with an engineer at Aerohive, that's what we went with.
Yeah, that's what I would have recommended. And that's where, you know, Chris Fraser and I talk about Aerohive a lot. And really it's because we think they're great products. It's Aerohive understands that not all devices work with wireless the same way. And so if you're in a primarily iPad deployment, the 330s don't really help you a lot. You know, the 330s are their higher end radios. They have they're a 3x3x3 radio. Well, the iPad is a 1x1x1 device. So the extra 3x3x3 device doesn't really help you a lot. So with you guys being a MacBook Pro deployment, you guys really take advantage of the 330s 3x3x3 radios.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so, yeah, and that's one of the things people, you know, they say, well, the Airport is good enough. And, you know, the Airport devices are actually incredible in the home. They are extremely fast. They're extremely easy to configure. But you run into the situations there, like you run into, where something's not working right. And so you're having to go around to each one of them, trying to manage them. And if you've got, you know, 30 or 40 of those, that's a lot of access points to try to manually manage.
Yes. Yes, it is a lot. And that whole idea that I could no longer just, like the good old days, click on the Airport utility and see everything was incredibly frustrating. Ironically, once we unplugged several of them in the main classroom building and put, then the visibility of all the others came back. So I have an open case with Apple, still don't know what the mystery was. So I still don't know, but, we're in a better spot now because I can see them and obviously see the Aerohive. So we're in a good spot.
Well, and you know, I was talking to another school a couple months ago, and they were talking about how they had issues with the Wi-Fi in their gym. And you know, once they kind of started, they have Aerohive, and once they started researching it, they realized that their scoreboard was bleeding over on the Spectrum. Mm. And so those are the kind of things that, you know, a deployment like Aerohive gives you the ability to see that. You know, with an Airport deployment, if it works, that's great. But if you run into any issues, you know, if things feel slow, you've got really no idea why.
Right.
You know, with Aerohive, you've got the wireless and intrusion prevention system, what they call WIPS, and you've just got much more visibility into your network. You know, what's going on, who's on your network. Like I'm running into an issue right now with our firewall, where it's holding on to DHCP leases too long. Mm-hmm. And so it shows, like right now I could log on, it says I have 700 devices on the network. That's really just not true. I just don't ever have that many people on our network, but for some reason it's the DHCP server is acting a little wonky. And I know that because 75 to 80% of my users are wireless only. And so I log into our Hive Manager account with Aerohive, and it shows 200 people online. And so I know something's up with the Sonic Wall because, you know, again, majority of my users are online. So, you know, we've been really, really thrilled with our deployment. And I think it's just showing that Apple really recommends them now to their schools, because I think they're starting to see that, you know, while these airport extremes are great for the home, you know, if you've only got, you know, a deployment that you've got one access point, two access points, the airport extremes can work great. But if you just start, if you really are doing a true wireless deployment, you've got to use, you know, enterprise level gear.
I agree. And we knew going into the one-to-one that, I think it was, well, we'll distribute the airport the best we can. We don't know what we don't know because we don't have 480 wireless clients and there's no way of knowing. We made it through a year and a half and knew that it was time. So all the research paid off and the trial with a few AirHive base stations that they sent paid off. And, it was, a lot of homework there, a lot of research, and a lot of conversations with other vendors. But this is a decision I'm happy I made.
Well, wireless is just a complicated technology to be. I mean, for something you can't see. I'll give you for example. I'm studying for a certification in wireless, and I've been studying for it for probably 6 months now. It's that difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading that, and I think I tweeted about it. That of course, attenuation is the loss of RF signal, And water is a big cause of loss. So water attenuates an RF signal. Well, the human body is made up to what? You know, 50 to 70% water?
Yes.
So if you plan on, say, wireless coverage in an auditorium, and you do a site survey, you do the spectrum analyzer, and you say, okay, this will get us covered. Well, then you put 400 kids into an auditorium, you've added a lot of attenuators. Is that even a word? A lot of things that attenuate the signal.
Yes. And our school, our 90% of our walls in our school are block, and then you add in walls and walls of lockers. So there's some challenges there. You know, it's not simple. It is. I agree with you. It's a little bit complicated, and it's tough for me sometimes to get my head around. But that's why you ask, you learn by asking.
Well, and it's in, you know, because concrete and metal are obviously big things that kind of slow to, you know, mm-hmm. make the signal go less, you know, not as far as it normally would. And that's, we're going back to the classroom. If the iPad is not working well because of the wireless, all the teacher knows is that her iPad or her MacBook Pro isn't working well.
Exactly. Right. And yes, it's not the outside, the things on the outside. It's in that perception is this device in my hand is not doing the right thing, and it's not that easy sometimes. There's all those factors. If you think about that, you have this box that's filtering, and then you have these fiber lines, and then all those things. But I suppose that's our job, right? Is to make all those pieces click together.
Well, and the more I learn about technology, you know, wireless, wired, iPad, the Mac, the more I realize that it's kind of the luck of the draw that any of this stuff actually works at all. It's all so complicated.
It is. And it sometimes is overwhelming because everything you read, everybody has an answer. Everybody has a solution. And it really does require that you read and ask. You know, you ask people in other schools like ours, what are you doing? Are you happy with that? You know, and that's, to me, that's the best way to get some sense of direction to help in the decision process.
Yeah. And that's where our decision to use a lot of hosted services has been huge for me, because I'm a one person shop. Mm-hmm. and recognizing where my skill set is. You know, my skill set is not in running Windows Active Directory servers. And so mm-hmm. in realizing that, it's better for me to outsource certain things than spend weeks of my time trying to troubleshoot them. It just makes more sense.
I agree. I'm honestly slowly learning that a little more. We are a two-person shop, and we have our strengths, but we also know when to pick up the phone or send the email, because there's just so many hours in the day, and there does become that issue of efficiency.
What are you guys doing with AppleCare, and how are you handling the repairs of the MacBook Pros?
Well, what we did when we launched this, we took a 4-year lease and with a fair market buyout, and we took 4 years of AppleCare. We also contracted with Safeware for accidental insurance, and we have a technology fee to the families. So, you know, part of the leasing fee, the leasing payments and the Safeware fees are bundled into that. But we assure the families for that fee, your son or daughter has 24/7 access to a very, very good laptop with a very full suite of applications that they can have administrative rights to and treat as their own. So the way we handle the AppleCare, I should say, unfortunately, I spend some days a good deal of time on the phone with AppleCare dealing with issues. It's the same drill. We serial number, verify, talk out the problem, try some solutions. Hopefully it works. If that doesn't work, if it's obviously a hard drive failure or some issue, a repair ticket is created, and they send the box, generally comes the next day, and I send it out. If I don't do that, there is another company locally where they will do a pickup and take it to their center and do the AppleCare repairs. My goal very soon is for us to get a GSX account, because it does get a little bit frustrating at times if the way the current arrangement is, if there's a suspected issue with RAM, they'll send me RAM and I can do the RAM. But if it's an issue with the battery or the hard drive or the CD, that's because of a lack of certification. I can't do that, which I know I can do it, but I can't do it within the warranty boundaries. So that's how we're handling the AppleCare. We have a bank of loaners of MacBooks that we give to the students, and we send it out and get it back as quickly as we can. The non-warranted repairs through Safeware, a claim is filed, and a local company called EduTech, we send them there for the out of warranty repair, the cracked screens, the water damage, the drops, things like that.
Yeah, that's, you know, we're kind of in that same boat with the local repair shop. And a lot of times, if you can take it somewhere, they can come pick it up and it's still covered. And if they can do the AppleCare, saves you a day or two on the shipping.
Right.
What do you do, like if a student, say, their hard drive died at, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning, how long are they without a laptop? Do you have loaners? How do you handle that?
Every student will have a laptop every day. So if they come and say, all I see is a folder with a question mark and class starts in 5 minutes, we give them a MacBook Pro. They log in, boom. When we did the deployment, every student was given a 500 gigabyte external drive, and they are responsible for the Time Machine backups. So hopefully they've done that. If it is as serious as a completely blown drive, they can, you know, we could get their data back. But getting back to that particular day, they would have the laptop for that day. I'm seeing more and more of them it's not too much of a concern because everything's in Dropbox. The key things they've either emailed to themselves or it's on Dropbox so they can go about their business. They check in with me at the end of the day and I'll either say, hey, it's back, or bring your drive in tomorrow. I'm going to reimage this and use Migration Assistant and pull your directory over. Or I have a case, it's going out. The box will be here tomorrow. Check with me later in the week and we'll get it back to you.
That Migration Assistant is really a magical tool.
It is. I love it. I don't know why every time it is. Oh, I shouldn't jinx this, but it's worked every time. And I just love it because if the student is diligent with the backup, they are amazed too. That wow, that's my computer. So yes, it is. So
your wallpaper and everything.
Yep. And if we have. The non-warranty repairs, especially the logic boards through water damage, take a while. So we do sometimes pull their directory onto a loaner, and they're like, wow, this is, it's basically your laptop. So take care of this one, please. So it's a great tool.
My in-laws on Friday, they had a 2008 MacBook. It was the last of the non-unibody white ones. And it, for whatever reason, just started freezing, and you really couldn't get to do anything. And eventually kind of determined that the computer was shot. It appeared that the logic board, the hard drive, was still good, but it appeared that something with the Lodge Award was being flaky. So we said, hey, let's go ahead and just buy a new one. It's time. So they bought a new one, and I popped the drive out, plugged it into an external drive, did Migration Assistant, you know, even brought the wallpaper back. The only thing they had to do was to relink their Dropbox account, and that was about it. And it's one of those tools that if you're coming from the Windows world, you think there's no way this can work. There's just no way that this Migration Assistant will work. The first time my headmaster ever got a new computer and I kind of, you know, told him about Migration Assistant, he was kind of said, there's no way that'll work. And then lo and behold, it did. And that really, to me, speaks to the benefit of the synergy between making the hardware and the software together.
Yes, it does, because it obviously, I don't know if I could do it with, I've never tried it with, like, say, Carbon Copy Cloner or anything. So it is seamless. Someone asked me recently, well, even though they are Active Directory accounts, does it work? And yes, it does work, because they're local accounts. You know, it just pulls across, and they use the same login credentials, and it just, boom. It maybe take a couple minutes to get it all set up, but there it all appears.
That was the same strategy we did with our teachers. And the more people I talked to, it seems like more people are going that way with a local Time Machine backup. Because as your data grows, if you're trying to do Time Machine backups on a Mac server, I mean, again, if you have 400 students coming on Monday morning trying to back up, you know, trying to make a backup to a server, it'll just kill the network.
Yes. Yes. And philosophically, we went into this, granted, this is not grade 9-12. We wanted to teach the students the responsibility of managing this laptop, managing their data, which means, you know, logically, you have to manage the backup. We will hand you the drive. You're responsible from this point on to do a weekly backup, keep that drive in a safe spot, and have it available. And that's, we felt very comfortable with that. That we learned that from Will at Mount Clare. You know, we're getting you ready for life after high school. Here you go. So
it's your responsibility in life to back up your data. Yep. And we have I have a staff member who is kind of my ideal technology user. She, you know, she knows what her limits are, and so she has a question, she'll Google it first, and if she can't figure it out, then she'll come and talk to me. But she realizes it's like it's probably in her benefit to begin to learn how to take care of herself, and you know, obviously the big infrastructure things are my responsibility, but if she's having an issue, a perfect example of one of the things that she figured out last week, and she stopped by and told me, she wanted to add a font to Microsoft Office. So when she installed the font into the Mac, it wasn't in Office. Well, so she realized, well, that's kind of strange. So she Googled it and found out that Microsoft Office actually has its own font directory.
Yes.
So she found that, added the font to that directory, and it worked fine. And, you know, that's what I kind of foresee the student and the employee and the teacher of the future doing is we want them to learn, you know, technology is at a place in our lives where, you know, if something doesn't work right, you can't just throw your hands up and expect the tech person to fix it.
Right.
Because as your whole lives move that are integrated in with technology, you've got to begin to take care of yourself in some ways. Just as like if you own a home, you can't call a handyman every time something goes wrong. It's probably in your best interest to begin to learn how to fix your own things.
I agree. And I took this role in 2010, and I know on a previous podcast, I think it was with Cole, you were talking about that. I think the days of massive infrastructures and huge tech staffs are fading, if not already gone. You know, it's just, I think it's all becoming the end user centric. You know, we can give you the tools and point you in the direction, but I think I just don't see us ever ramping up again with, you know, 15 servers and all that. I just don't see it. And right, this people are going to, and with obviously with Google, you can find anything out, and it's just a different world. And I think it's great personally.
Well, I do too. You know, you mentioned the giving the students administrator access to their computer. I love that. I mean, let them treat it as their own, you know, let them learn, let them, it's one of those things where, you know, if they screw something up, let them try to figure it out. I had a student that came to me the other day, had a issue on her iPad that she was using. She couldn't figure something out. I said, well, what do you think you should do? said, just don't come ask me. Think about what you should do. And mm-hmm. she thought about it for 3 minutes and then figured it out. And that's the goal. The goal isn't for me to be a Mr. Fix-It. The
right.
goal is for me to be an enabler. Like, obviously, we want to provide the infrastructure for things to happen, but I want to be an enabler. I want to teach people how to do things, not just you know, remote into their computer and do it. I want to explain to them why I'm doing what I'm doing,
right.
how it works. And it's just like when people ask me for recommendations for how do they protect their internet at home, and I always recommend OpenDNS Family Shield. And I explained to them how DNS works. I say, hey, it's kind of like the phone book of the internet, and kind of explain to them, because I feel like the more people know, the better educated they can be about decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I agree. The more they can understand, and it's not rocket science. It may seem mysterious, but you know, it's the stuff. You can learn a lot, and it's just a question of making sure, as you said, they have the tools. And then they, you know, what I'm learning is they need to put that little bit of time, especially the students, in terms of the care, like the doing the you know, disk utility and the software updates, et cetera. It's getting them to take that time that right now for us is a challenge.
I kind of liken it how our teachers, as a teacher, you want your students to not only be able to answer the questions on a test or a paper, but know why they're doing mm-hmm. it, how it works. And so when I explain to our teachers, hey, I want to teach you. I don't want to do things for you. I want to teach you so you can then know for yourself why things work the way they do, how they work. And just as that's the way you want your students to learn. Obviously, you could go in and give the students the answers and show them how to do something, but your ultimate goal is for them to learn it.
Yes, that's a great point and a great analogy. Yes, we want them to be thinkers and not memorizers, but thinkers and very analytical and confident. You know, confident in their academic ability, and the same thing would carry over, confidence in their ability to handle to manage their technology. Sure. Sure.
But, I mean, because it's no longer acceptable, even in 2013, in the workplace to come in and not understand technology. It's really just expected that you have some sort of idea of what's going on with your computer. And so, you know, you think about if you've got a ninth grader, you know, they've got a couple years of high school, hopefully mm-hmm. a couple years of college. A lot's going to be expected of them in the workplace. You know, they come in expecting to know how to build a PowerPoint presentation.
Sure.
It's just expected that they know how to do that. And there's, you know, if you don't know how to do that, it's not like it's the tech person's responsibility to teach you PowerPoint or teach you Word.
Right.
It's just,
right.
you're just supposed right. to know that's part of the job.
Sure. Sure. And I see that here every day. That's part of it. Our students are constantly in the front of the room. You know, they have to present, they have to be able to speak publicly, use that technology, do a project in iMovie. Do some podcasting, you know, using GarageBand, but it's an expectation that they have some comfort with using those tools, those presentation tools. Sure.
Carl, this has been a fantastic show. I really appreciate you coming on. Where can people find you out on the internet?
Our school is at www.archmereacademy.com. I am in the process of putting together a blog. We're part of our integration for next year is to use a school press blog. So that will be coming very, very soon. And I'm excited. It's one of those things. I'm going to take some local content on our wiki and push it out onto that. Try to talk about Archmere technology as well as just educational technology in general. So I'll email you that link once it's up and going.
Yeah, that'd be great. Of course, I am at Bradley Chambers on Twitter and Chambers Daily on the web. The website for the show is outofschool.net. So all the links that we have mentioned will be in there. A link to the school website will be in there as well, or in your favorite podcasting client. If you haven't left a review in iTunes for the show, that would be great if you could do that. That helps new people find the show. So again, Carl, thanks for coming on, and I hope everybody has a great week.
Thank you very much, Bradley. It was an honor and a pleasure. Thank you.